Hello, and welcome back to the 46 Brooklyn podcast. I'm your host, Ben Link, the president of 46 Brooklyn Research, but I'm also a pharmacist fed up with fake, artificially inflated drug prices. It has been a minute since we've had a last podcast episode, so I think it's appropriate to start with some reminders about what this podcast is. Last year, when we launched the podcast and dove into some, but not all of, the drug reference prices available in the US, we talked about the use of those drug reference prices within our work at 46 Brooklyn, and ultimately got around to briefly discussing how drug benefits get financed in the commercial space. We called our first series Drug Pricing 101, with the idea that we needed to introduce the core concepts of the US drug supply chain to hopefully foster a better understanding of the data available at 46brooklyn.com and our drug pricing system as a whole. As with any educational endeavor, I have attempted to present the information in a logical manner to hopefully ease understanding. However, I want to continue to recognize and acknowledge that everyone learns differently. And to that end, if you have any questions regarding this podcast, whether it's this episode or past episodes, please reach out to us on our website. So now that we're, shall we say, back in session with Drug Pricing Podcast, the question becomes, what next, right? And if this was school, like the Drug Pricing 101 referenced podcast of old, we'd normally start school with a reminder of what we should already know. What did we learn last time that enables us to have newer, interesting, more depth with our conversations going forward? And so on today's episode, we're going to try to recap what took us 10 episodes to establish and retell the drug pricing story from a different angle to then hopefully dive into what those reference visualizations are at 46 Brooklyn. So, if you go far enough back in our history, right, the only price that used to matter at the pharmacy counter was the price that the provider was counting. Go back before we had concerns about safe and efficacious medicines, before the FDA, the only price that used to matter back in, say, the wild, wild west of drug pricing was the price at the pharmacy counter. If you wanted morphine for your cough or heroin for your nose, runny nose, those were things that could be sold to you at the pharmacy counter directly. The only price that would matter in determining whether you walked out of there with a prescription or not was whether or not you had the two nickels to spend on that morphine tincture for your cough or not. The thing is we realized that that system probably wasn't the best. We started to have concerns about safe and efficacious medicines, and ultimately we moved into a place where we wanted to involve others in trying to pay for medications. Ultimately, we brought in health plans, employers, to help pay for these things. Why? Because it was one of the things that we could do to recruit and retain individuals. So again, in our pricing story, the first pricing benchmark that mattered was the price at the pharmacy counter, but ultimately, it wasn't just our money we were spending at the pharmacy counter anymore. We had our employer's money also there to help us buy and sell and get these medicines that we so desperately wanted. So the history of our drug reference files and our drug reference pricing actually are quite informative to how we got where we are right now. And answering, say, the five W's of what, who, where, when, why drug prices are, the history is very informative to help us understand why we are where we currently are. And so let's take a look at what the individual prices tell us from a historical perspective. The oldest drug reference price we can talk about is AWP. AWP was established back in the 1960s. If you listen to that podcast, you know that. It was established by a California Medicaid pharmacist, basically calling up his buddies and saying, what is the drug price? We're trying to help these poor people afford their medications. We want to help them pay, but we need to know how much money to give you such that you can give them the medications. This is the history of the provider price being the price that was most important to selling and buying prescription medications. Over time, private industry took over ownership of that drug reference price. It wasn't California setting or surveying, recording, whatever you want to say, the AWP price. Groups like First Data Bank got involved. Redbook got involved, telling us, hey, this is the price that is being asked for drugs. The thing was, is that proceeded well along for 20-ish years. By the 1980s, every Medicaid program in the country was paying for drugs at 100% of AWP. We were all paying what the provider asked us for when it came to drug pricings. Thing is, people started asking questions, was that the right price? OIG, the Office of the Inspector General, got involved. And lo and behold, the AWP price was actually 10 to 15% higher than the price the pharmacy was actually buying the drug at. It was so shocking that it wasn't believed. They had to rerun their report and confirm that, yes, the price that the pharmacy was telling us through AWP was inflated relative to their real price. This is all stuff we covered before in our 101 series. But as a reminder, take a step back and think about what we really learned, right? We learned that, like many industries, right, the person selling us the product isn't necessarily telling us what it costs to make the product. When we go to the grocery store and we buy eggs or we buy milk, we don't necessarily know what the input costs are that go into that. We have the expectation that although I'm at this grocery store buying this set of eggs, if I were to go to the grocery store down the street or next door or across town, I would experience a similar price point. That experience is largely predicated off of our consumer dollars, right? Driving that, because we could go shop someplace else. If somebody tries to exploit our price too much, we'll eventually become sensitive enough to that, that the market can't go too crazy with that. But drug pricing doesn't work like that, or at least wasn't working like that by the 80s, right? People were helping pay for drugs. We brought in groups like pharmacy benefit managers to help transact claims, to facilitate the transaction of prescription drugs, just like credit card companies help us facilitate the transaction of eggs. The difference is that when I buy my eggs, when I buy my milk, that's all my money that's going into that. When the PBM helps me buy atorvastatin, aripiprazole, Humira, whatever it is, somebody else's money is helping buy that. And so ultimately, the learning was is that AWP was broken. AWP was not reflective of what we thought, shall we say, we were getting. We weren't getting the pharmacy provider's price. We were getting some sort of markup to that. We felt cheated. We felt wrong. And so enter in the age of trying to estimate acquisition costs. We went from paying 100% of AWP for drugs to CMS demanding to their state Medicaid as part of the 1990 cycle of events that, hey, state Medicaid directors, when you go to submit your SPA and tell us what you're paying for drugs, it will no longer be acceptable for you to say you're paying 100% of AWP for drugs. And so we started to discount the AWP price, estimate the acquisition cost. We used other pricing benchmarks like WAC to try and get an idea of what drug costs were and whether they're fair. From there, right, what proceeded to happen? Well, we had about 20-ish years again of this middleman from the 90s to the mid-2000s. These middlemen grew and grew and grew. They helped us figure out discounts to drug pricing. We were no longer paying 100% of AWP for our drugs. We were saving money. Of course, it wouldn't take us too long for, shall we say, history to repeat ourselves. In doing investigative work, lo and behold, we determined that the middlemen who we hired and who we thought were protecting us from drug pricing malfeasance, right? They were determined to be the ones who were milking the system. We have personal experience of that here in Ohio, right? The state attorney or the state auditor went and did an investigation and found out that the Medicaid program, again, in the public domain, the easiest things to study are often the state-run programs. They determined that they were overpaying for drugs by hundreds of millions of dollars. The amount that they were paying for services was hundreds of millions of dollars above the amount the pharmacy provider was receiving. They were arbitraging, taking price value from the difference between what was paid and what they could charge. That wasn't what we thought we were getting. We thought we had these partners that were going to help us figure out drug pricing and get benefits and savings through their knowledge of what drug prices is and were. But rather, it seems, right, what we were buying was really just leverage. They are bigger than us. Back to our grocery store example, right? When I go buy my eggs at the grocery store, I'm not expecting to get the same kind of value that, say, McDonald's is when they go and buy eggs. McDonald's is going to buy millions of eggs a year to give us, you know, our McMuffins, our egg McMuffins, right? Their price per egg is going to be lower than my price per egg because I'm not going to buy that much. We thought, perhaps rightly, perhaps wrongly, perhaps our expectations weren't reasonable, but we thought that the leverage of the PBM was, shall we say, fully ours, that we were getting the full value of the discount. And so what happened, right? Even before Ohio Medicaid, we'd already moved to try and get away from estimates of acquisition costs, right? We already knew, just like we knew with the providers that they were lying to us about drug prices, we already knew that the middle was arbitraging drug price. And so we started to try and establish a way to pay for drugs at actual acquisition cost. We entered the NADAC era, where we have a way of trying to dress down the provider, saying, hey, we know you've lied to us about drug prices in the past, so go ahead, go down to your underwear. We know that, you know, there's still some private off-invoice discounts. We can't see behind those, but dress down and tell us what drug prices are and let us find a way to pay for drugs with that knowledge. Let's not rely upon a middleman, a PBM, to tell us what kind of discounts they can extract. Let's try and say, we know what drug prices are. We know what a fair market rate is. Let's empower some neutral third party that's not part of the drug supply chain to tell us what drug prices are and pay in that way. And so the history of our drug reference pricing can help explain where we are right now with drug pricing, right? We've never solved the problem of providers, shall we say, lying to us about drug prices. The incentives of the system still encourage providers to say, hey, these drug prices are 110% of AWP, way above what we know real rational drug pricing is. And yet, if they were to perhaps try and tell us what real drug prices are, the current contracts, the current incentives of the system would doom them. You cannot expect any pharmacy under the existing insurance model, right, to offer you, shall we say, the GoodRx or the Mark Cuban price on every single claim. Why? Because their contracts don't allow them to. Our expectation that we get AWP minus 85 or whatever percentage is for generic drugs cannot support rational drug pricing. And so pharmacy providers tell us that drugs are still really expensive. And it's not just the incentives of the PBM, to be clear, it's also some of the incentives of their own institutions. We know pharmacy providers participate in the 340B program, where they get access to the kind of aggregate discounts that Medicaid does. Medicaid recognizes over 50% of its drug cost reduced after the fact through rebates. 340B covered entities have the ability to acquire drugs at that same kind of cost, and yet they still walk around and tell us that these drugs cost 110% of AWP. Their charge masters, their out-of-pocket cash-only pricing is still well inflated relative to what the known drug costs are for them. So we've not solved the provider's incentive in all this, and we also haven't solved the PBM's incentive in all this, right? PBMs are still operating in traditional pricing model where they say, hey, you don't need to pay us an admin fee. You don't need to pay us to do this work. We'll just charge you for the drugs and you can pay the drug bills. That wouldn't explain how they make all of their money. Recent reports said that in 2022, the collective experience of the big three PBMs generated hundreds of billions of dollars in profit for the PBMs. If you do the back of the napkin math for the number of prescriptions that were out there under PBM management, that's roughly $6 per claim in profit that they made off of administering these benefits. I do not know what the average cost of your prescription is or what the average cost for any employer out there is. But I can tell you that in Medicaid, the average generic drug cost is right around $20. $6 of that is roughly 33% in added cost. So all of this is to say that the history of our drug reference files and our drug reference pricing that we studied so intricately in the beginning of our podcast series tells a story of how we've continued to try and rationalize drug pricing. It started with asking providers what it cost and paying providers what they asked. And then it got to a point of trying to leverage, hey, there's a million of us buying eggs. Can we get a better price than the price at the counter? But we still not really solve the underlying incentives of the system. And today, the dashboards that exist on 46brooklyn.com that are attempting to use what we know about reference prices alongside what publicly available data we can get for Medicare and Medicaid help us tell the story of how we got here and why the prices we are paying today are so irrational and arguably fake. So, on our next episode, we're going to transition from our first year of drug pricing school into now trying to apply what we know about these drug reference prices. We're going to try to weaponize, for lack of a better term, these data points, this information to say, what can we know about drug prices and how that knowledge might explain what's going on or likely to go on in the times to come. As always, I want to thank you for listening to this episode, and I hope you'll tune into the next one. The 46 Brooklyn podcast would like to thank McGowan Braybender for the use of their facilities in recording our podcast. We'd also like to thank Ben at Journeyman Productions for assistance with our music and sound. As a reminder to our listeners, if you're curious about any of the materials discussed on today's episode, additional information can always be found on 46brooklyn.com.